question too, Terry, is suddenly, you know, you're separated from the main organization. For example, you know, you are being asked to set up an innovation lab. So you've left the ivory tower. You've got out of there at long last. You've got an opportunity to show that you are potentially independent and able to do something. How do you stay connected in that ecosystem that suddenly has changed for you? How can you push this out into a more open source model, which the organization might be not yet aware of? Because, you know, Innovation Labs, is it open source? What do we mean by open source from your perspective? And then what are good examples that you've seen of outposts that have been able to shape organizations to think differently back at the core about how to approach innovation going forward? How do you respond to those sort of questions?
Well, no good outpost that exists does so without a good communications link back to the mainland. No good outpost that exists will exist very long if its efforts aren't translatable and commercializable back to the main company. And so I think one of the keys to success of setting up those innovation labs, so to speak, is that they've got to be very deeply aligned with lines of business. And that's a challenge. If you think about the business units inside the enterprise, their KPIs, their success metrics are very often very near term. I've got to hit a certain number this quarter. I have to launch a new product next quarter. That's the horizon upon which most of the business units are functioning. Now, all of a sudden, an innovation team walks in and says, I've got something that I think is going to be really interesting. It's a new market. It's disruptive for you. It's something you ought to be thinking about, but it's probably 12 months out. It's probably 2 years out. I'd like you to commit some of your budget. I'd like you to commit some of your resources to that. These business units are being asked. That's a really, really difficult bridge to get over, and I think it's one of the things that makes really good innovation teams and good innovation programs stand out from the others is the integrated nature that they have with actual business units, the buy-in, the commitment that they have from executive leadership on down that says these things are important and that we will actually judge some of our business units' success based on how much they're actually collaborating with our innovation team and integrating and piloting and testing.
Do you agree? I mean, by that, you obviously are very much in the school of integrating. In other words, making sure there is a very strong alignment. There's a number of KPIs that come into each other that don't clash. There's a lot of argument, oh, no, you should separate it out. You should ring fence it, make it a separate unit so it can comfortably develop up the future business of tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. How do you buy that and how do you fit that in with the reality of what you're dealing with?
Well, whether or not an innovation team ought to be tightly integrated within the organization or completely disconnected and remote is actually a pretty nuanced question. And the answer to that is it's complicated. No outpost that sits out on its own that is unaligned with the business units that it's supporting or that it's sitting alongside of will ultimately be successful if it doesn't have a way of integrating new products, new services, that disruption back into those business units. It just ultimately won't be because from both perspectives, the enterprise, for example, that's looking for those new sources of innovation and new products and services without an ability to actually integrate those and apply it to their current business in an iterative way will struggle. But much of that outside innovation that they're out there sourcing, whether it's from entrepreneurs or others, will ultimately get very frustrated as well because at the end of the day, those entrepreneurs aren't looking to just build relationships with an innovation team. They're ultimately looking to build relationships with the business units. They want to become the vendor, the channel partner. They want to be acquired someday even by those businesses. And that's the reason that they're engaged in those conversations. So it's a fine balance between making sure that you're arm's length away from the organization. Arm's length is a two-way street. Arm's length means that you're far enough away that the organization, the enterprise, can't smother you, can't strangle out the risk-taking that needs to happen. But arm's length means that it's also close enough that it can be pulled near, it can be drawn into the organization whenever the time is right.
And how do you bridge? You see people setting up in very different ways. You see them coming in. As you say, it partly it's determined by their whole belief, their whole sort of setup and what they want to try and achieve. But what do you try to do within your role to be able to bridge that better? Once you've got a better understand, obviously, of what they're trying to achieve, what do you do to sort of set that up to help it align that little bit better to what they're trying?
Well, this may sound self-serving, but I think it's based on a decade plus of experience and collaborating with both large enterprises and entrepreneurs. We've ultimately come to the conclusion that that they need a translator, that they need a partner with aligned interests. I think we've become very good at that at TechNexus to sit between the collaboration that happens within large enterprises and the external entrepreneurial ecosystem. We're there with aligned interests on both sides of the table. We care about the success and the innovation agenda of the large enterprise. We care about the ventures very often. We're a shareholder, a stakeholder in those ventures, or at least we become one after we've demonstrated that there's value to the enterprise. They've market validated that venture and given us an indication that there's reason to commit some of our capital to it. I think that any successful program that tries to exist between a large enterprise and the entrepreneurial ecosystem needs to have additional players that are those aligned interests and that can be force multipliers for both sides of the equation. That's what we've built at TechNexus. I think there are a few other firms that contribute in different ways, but that's really the unique aspect of what we're trying to do.
I want to pick up on this because when I was looking, doing a bit of research background, I came up with this, forced multipliers. I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. What does that actually mean?
Well, I think the idea of a force multiplier is really clear, right? A force multiplier is somebody who can speak with your voice, who can hear things with your ear, who sees things the way you see things, but adds value to that.
Right.
I'll give you a good example. There was a large organization we worked with about a year and a half ago. They brought us in because they had launched an innovation program, an incubation lab, actually, even. And the first year of that incubation lab's existence, they were very proud that they had spent 52 weeks, one meeting a week, 52 meetings they had done internally with their team, where they brought people from all over their organization into whiteboarding sessions, and they dreamed big, and they came up with ideas of what should our enterprise be doing? What new businesses should we be entering into? 52 meetings. They then spent the next 40 weeks, one meeting per week, where each of the members of that innovation team went out and interviewed 40 different customers, clients, one-on-one. They sat down with them. They said, what should we do? What should we be? How do you want us to perform differently in the future? They realized after doing almost a year and a half of those meetings that ultimately all they were hearing was their own ideas. They were hearing things through their preconditioned ear, their preconditioned bias. And if they had had an entrepreneur's ear in that room, in those conversations, if they'd had an entrepreneur's voice occasionally, the idea of breaking down barriers and thinking well outside of the box of what they're working on would have been so much more profound. And it took them a year and a half to recognize that entrepreneurs not necessarily better, but just differently see the world. Entrepreneurs hear opportunities differently. They can pick up on where innovation priorities maybe should be a little bit more important than otherwise. And I think that's one of the challenges of the large enterprises. Very oftentimes they think what they're doing is opening up a discussion around innovation by saying, let's go ask our customers what more they want from us. And then the customer looks back and says, well, I'd like for you to do this thing better or this thing faster, or I might like you to do this ancillary thing that's sort of similar to what you already do. But the customer is never going to say back to the enterprise, I'd like you to do this thing entirely different than what you do right now, this thing that is unexpected from you. That's just not the nature of customer interactions with vendors like that. And it's rarely the nature of interactions from internal teams as well.
This is a terrific point, as you say, the translator, the ear, the voice, whatever you want to say. What happens, is there a moment when the guy that's out there or the group that's out there in this outpost suddenly get this sort of, you know, listening ability because they've been either hearing you or they've been exposed? What is it you try to do to push it out so they can recognize that maybe they're not listening? I mean, how do you pose that? How do you get them to sort of recognize this problem?
You know, this isn't our phrase. You've heard this probably many times before, but so many large enterprises often will fly out to Silicon Valley or come to a place like Chicago and hang out with entrepreneurs, try to get exposed to entrepreneurial ideas. And in many cases, that's the equivalent of technology tourism. It might even be a lot worse than that. It's like pet an entrepreneur day at the zoo. You know, they come into an incubator, they walk around and they see all of these exciting, vibrant young ideas happening and think that somehow that's going to translate into transformation for their enterprise. That pet an entrepreneur day might feel fun, but it's ultimately frustrating to the entrepreneur because they're there trying to figure out how to build their business for tomorrow, the next day. A large company ultimately gets frustrated because pet an entrepreneur day rarely translates into a new business, a new growth opportunity. That chasm that exists in collaboration is something we've written about, talked about quite a bit. The well-meaning new relationship starts, but then there is this enormous collaboration chasm that says, how do we actually engage? How do we actually take the first, second, third, and fourth steps together? Very oftentimes that visit to the incubator or that visit to that innovation hub is step number one, and then we know what step number 10 looks like, but we don't really have any mechanism for the 9 steps in between number one and number 10. That's one of the challenges, I think, with a lot of those enterprises going and reaching out to entrepreneurs.
Yeah,